after graduation, she began working with the Gobernatorio de Roma, the technical
Governatorato.
Oh, why am I just like reading whatever I want today?
Finding letters that are not there.
Maybe that's what people do when they read my name and they say Nigiri.
Oh. Yeah. That's a lot of not letters.
Sounds right. Yep.
Hi. Welcome to season 12 of She Builds Podcast, where we share stories about women in the design and construction field, one lady at a time.
This season's theme is government, civic work, and urban planning. We are talking about ladies who are involved in public projects or services.
As always, we are not experts. We are just sharing stories about the information we find as friends having a fun conversation. If you find an error, send us an email and we will all continue learning together.
Get ready to learn about Elena Luzzatto Valentini, who worked at the technical office for the municipality of Rome. I'm Nurjiri Rivas, thinking of dinner in Houston, Texas.
And I'm Jessica Rogers, digesting my dinner in Miami, Florida.
Mm.
And I'm Lizzie Rahr, also thinking of dinner in San Francisco.
Yummy.
Kind of fitting. I had pizza for dinner.
Oh.
On brand.
Oggi posso provare un po' il mio italiano perché andiamo in Italia.
Molto bene. Il mio italiano è molto arrugginito. Ma sono emozionato. Andiamo.
Okay, my Italian's rusty.
That's literally what I just said.
Yeah, I don't remember.
She translates.
Yeah.
I'm translating. So if you didn't catch it, we're going to Italy this episode. Once upon a time, we did a semester abroad in Italy and Florence. So that's when my Italian was great, or well, understandable. But now I just know phrases, so be prepared, y'all. Allora, andiamo in Italia.
Va bene. The time was October 30th, 1900. The place, Ancona, Italy.
Oh, okay. So, to start off with some Italian geography, Ancona is a coastal city on the eastern side of Italy, so it's on the Adriatic Sea across from Croatia. I'd call it mid-calf on the boot.
Mm.
Directly east of Florence, southeast of Venice, and northeast of Rome.
Hmm.
Also, the landscape is very hilly, whereas like if you go north towards Venice, it's more flat in the landscape.
Yeah, which makes it a great route for travelers making passenger traffic their main economic driver for that region.
Yes. Okay. Thank you both for setting that stage. Her parents were Vittorio Valentini and Annarella Chloe Luzzatto Gabrielli. Vittorio was a railway engineer and he was Jewish. Annarella was Catholic. This was super unusual for the time for a Jew and a Catholic to marry, but it was not illegal, thankfully. Honestly, people should be free to love whoever they choose.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. If it's right for them, then more power to them. But still, very interesting. And hopefully it didn't bring them strife from outsiders or family, since like you said, it was unusual for the time and might have been hard for them.
Yeah, I wonder how the holidays were for them. Celebrations.
Lots of celebrations.
Yeah.
I do wonder how much it played into her upbringing, being brought up in an unconventional household. And her family was not only unconventional for marrying outside of their heritage or faith. It was also a household that believed in women's education.
Yes.
I'm so loving this right now.
Yeah. Vittorio was also ahead of his time in this regard. He encouraged his daughter to seek an education. In his opinion, the more school she had, the better opportunities she would have. Vittorio, Annarella, and Elena were a middle-class family. Yet, apparently, Vittorio had wealthy relatives that also supported Elena's education and paid for her schooling.
Okay. That's nice that they were able to use that for her schooling.
Yeah, it's great that they were so supportive. It's giving me Gilmore vibes, but I still love it.
Mm. At the age of 21, she moved 170 miles southwest of Ancona and arrived in Rome. She enrolled in the Regia Scuola Superiore di Architettura, the Royal Superior School of Architecture. I like that name. Name made me think that there were a bunch of architecture schools and that this one declared itself the most important. But it turns out that this was the first school of architecture in all of Italy.
I like your guess. But it sounds like it was a school with a lot of prestige and history, though, all the same.
Yes. Not only is it royal, but it's superior. Mm. Like, I love how that to include both.
Doubling down.
Mm-hmm.
Elena became the first woman to graduate from an architecture program in Italy when she received her diploma in 1925. Her thesis was a sanatorium.
Woo! Go, Elena! Congratulazioni.
Yay! For whatever reason, whenever I think of sanatoriums, I think of the Altos because they did a few of them. They sound cool.
After graduation, she began working with the Governatorato di Roma, the technical office for the municipality of Rome. This was the government department responsible for design and construction of public structures. She worked on designing public housing, cemeteries, schools, markets, train stations, colonial rural buildings in Somalia. She also did churches, hospitals, sanatoriums, and she restored monuments.
Whoa. That is a wide variety of project types. And cool to be doing some work in Africa as well.
Yeah. Sounds like a great opportunity to learn all these different project types.
Yeah. Super generalist. I feel like I should have said, spoiler alert, because I basically told you everything that she was working on during her whole career.
Oh, wow. Giving it away early, I see.
Yeah. Way to give it away.
Maybe we should just end the episode here. The end.
Okay.
There's no way.
Okay, just kidding.
You would never.
Right? Where's the waterfall?
Okay. Something I found interesting is that she started working with the Roman government in 1926. And then a few years later, in 1934, Mussolini prevented women from working in public institutions. So Elena was sort of grandfathered in, and she was the only woman that was listed as a full architect, not just an architect assistant. But she remained a level 2 architect for 20 years. It was only in her last 6 years of her public career that she received the title of first level architect.
I was going to say, we know that she worked on stuff, but life was still lifing.
Yeah, that's interesting. So wait, when Mussolini came to power, she was allowed to keep her job even though women weren't allowed to work in government?
Apparently.
I mean, I guess I'm glad that she was able to stay in her job through all of that and was mm-hmm. high enough up or grandfathered in, like you said. But
yeah.
Sad that she wasn't able to move up for 20 years. Also, she's Jewish, right? So how does that affect things?
Mm.
Great questions. Like, there's a whole list of reasons why this lady shouldn't be where she is, but she is.
Okay. It's like, don't ask questions is what you're telling me.
At this point, I don't know the answer, but I was also wondering, like, man, this lady must have been really good.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, let's discuss something much happier, something that I do know.
Okay.
In 1927, something that I was not expecting happened. Don't be scared. It's going to be a nice surprise. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
Ready.
In 1927, her mother, Annarella, graduated from architecture school, and not just any architecture school, Elena's alma mater, the Regia Scuola Superiore di Architettura. And just like that, Elena's mother became an architect.
Whoa, that's so cool. A mother-daughter duo.
Yes, that is so cool.
In 1928, Elena designed the project for a chalet in the seaside neighborhood of Rome, Lido di Ostia, for the fascist leader Giuseppe Bottai. I'm not going to get into who this guy was because I don't want to, but I found it curious that a fascist leader hired the daughter of a Jewish man to design his home. And I don't know why, but I could swear that we discussed a similar situation before on this podcast, but I just can't remember the lady. Can you?
I cannot. But I'm also so curious about how she's working for the fascists with her background. Like, I just, so many questions.
Yeah, I want to say it has to be one of our previous ladies, but I do remember when we told that lady's story that we commented on the irony of it all. Like, we wondered what the vibe would be working in an environment like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. During this time, because, you know, our ladies cannot do just one job.
Nope.
They got to have at least three. She was also working as assistant to Professor Vincenzo Fasolo at the Regia Scuola Superiore di Architettura.
You know, we got to thank streaming platforms for this, like that they didn't exist back then, because who knows what our ladies would have accomplished or not accomplished if Netflix existed back then. They would only have one job.
But, of course, teaching at her alma mater. Like, but wait, did she teach her mom if she was working there?
Oh, I don't know. Possibly? That's a great question.
Ooh.
Let's imagine maybe she did.
Okay.
I like to think about it. Yeah.
Something else I thought about, I know we joke all the time that our ladies like to have five jobs at a time, but now I'm starting to wonder if this is what they had to do to make ends meet. I have zero evidence to support this. It's just a thought that just came into my mind.
Oh, that's a very interesting point, though, because I would think for some of them that could be legitimate.
Yeah, that could be true. And in this case, maybe it was. I can imagine Elena not getting paid fairly or enough for several reasons.
Right.
And the country is going through what it's going through. So she needed that teaching gig for additional income.
Yeah.
Possibly.
Allegedly.
In theory. Rumor has it. Ooh. Let's go back to Lido di Ostia. Because I'm living winter in Houston. Literally, it was 80 degrees 3 days ago, and today's in the 40s.
Spring of deception is what you mean.
Spring of deception. That's where you're at.
Yes.
That's where I'm at. And I would rather be at the beach.
Mm.
So let's go to Lido di Ostia. Elena joined forces with the engineer Maria Bortolotti Cassoni. They worked together on the design entry of a competition for villas in this beach town, Lido di Ostia in Rome.
Maria! Ah! Okay, I love the connection to our episode 74, lady. For those who don't remember, Maria was the first woman to become a licensed engineer in Italy.
Maybe it was during her story that we mentioned her interactions with Giuseppe.
I think so.
Yeah, and that vaguely sounds familiar that we might have mentioned Elena. Future episode alert. The now is the present, and we are basically living in the future, y'all.
Yep. While I was researching Maria's story, I stumbled upon Elena, and I've been wanting to do an episode all about her since 30 episodes ago.
The future is now, my friend.
I mean, so fun. Glad you're finally getting to do it.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, Maria and Elena's project was never built. They won third place. And they also won third place on the competition for the Palazzo dell'Economia Corporativa di Pesaro, a government building in Pesaro, Italy.
That's so sad that it was never built, but I'm glad that they kept going with their competitions.
Yes, I am loving this continued collaboration.
All these competitions and prizes were getting her a lot of great attention. She was even considered to be one of the leading exponents of Italian rationalist architecture.
Ooh, impressive. Okay, as a refresher, Italian rationalism was a response to historicism. There was a rationale in thinking, like, think geometric forms and an ideal proportions. A great example of this that always comes to mind to me is Casa del Faccio in Como, Italy.
I like Italian rationalist architecture. It's one of my favorites, honestly. One of my favorite works in school was Casa del Faccio. Did we see that when we went to Italy? I think we did, and I really enjoyed it. We did, right?
Yeah. We went there on our trip to Como.
Yep.
It's a really cool building. I also really loved visiting that one.
Agreed. That was a nice bucket list building to see.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just nice reprieve from seeing like all the Renaissance buildings that we've been studying and all the like Baroque to finally see something that was like...
Not that.
Rationalist. Yeah.
I looked up images of Elena's work and I could see that rationalist style. I gotta say, I'm really into it. And I'm not the only one. Elena was getting good press. She had her work published in 1935 in the magazine Almanacco della Donna Italiana, Almanac of the Italian Woman. The writer, Anna Maria Speckle, wrote an article for the magazine called Architettura Moderna e Donne Architette, Modern Architecture and Italian Women Architects. In it, she said, and I quote, "Her artistic expression, achieved through both ordinary and monumental buildings, has managed to approach the simplicity of lines that allow her today to confidently and fully maturely engage with the most effective rationalism."
Yay, brava Elena.
During the Italian fascist period, she designed villas by herself or in partnership with other architects.
I'm still fascinated that she's able to work, but I'm really glad that she's able to.
Agree. That's awesome.
Me too. But I mean, again, I think that she was so good that they couldn't deny her. That's what I want to think.
I guess. Yeah.
In 1934, she left teaching. More time for her other jobs. A year later, she designed the covered market in Piazza Principe di Napoli. Today, it's called Piazza Alessandria in Rome. Here, her design reinterpreted the Roman market typology by utilizing the modern material of reinforced concrete.
Ooh, we love concrete.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I almost forgot about her teaching because she was like doing so much. But that's cool. And yes, we love the concrete.
We sure do. Do you hear that?
What, concrete settling?
Great guess. But no, it's the sound of a break to hear a word from our podcast supporters.
Hey, designers and curious minds. Ever wondered about the stories hiding within your building's walls? I'm Carrie Seaburn, structural engineer and host of Unstruct, the podcast that decodes and simplifies major concepts of structural design. Behind the math and physics, structural engineering simply predicts building behavior. Join me as we simplify the complex, making structural design accessible to everyone.
Nowadays, instead of measuring it via cost, we're saying, well, what about carbon, you know? We've got two levers now that we can, if an architect has an inefficient design, we can hit them with two levers, if you like.
The official casualty figure is 55,000. Everybody I talked to told me that the actual figure is at least three times as much. And I believe that. I mean, seeing what I saw, Turkish codes are good and they have been improving, but compliance was completely lacking.
Fluent in steel, concrete, masonry, and timber design, I'll bring you leading engineers to dissect the tales behind their building structure. Whether you're an architect, contractor, engineer, or just love a good story, this podcast is for you.
Yeah, beam penetrations. That's a fun topic on this project.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Unstruct. From within your walls, hear the story behind how your building stands today.
Okay, do you hear that?
What, another break or some more concrete?
No. Only one break per episode. I hear a song.
Okay.
Elena's going to the chapel and she's gonna get married.
Okay.
When Elena was 36 years old, she got married to the engineer Felice Romoli. Okay. Lizzie, especially Lizzie, because you've been coming in with the questions today. Don't ask me to share anything about him because I couldn't find much info on him. I think he worked in the government too.
All right. I guess I'll keep my questions to myself and just say, ooh, wedding bells.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's exciting. So one of her collaborators was a forever collaborator, perhaps?
Yeah.
In 1945, she won the competition to design Prima Porta Cemetery in Rome, also known as Cimitero Flaminio and Cimitero Montebello. It's got a lot of names.
Yeah, well, that seems confusing, but really interesting to design a cemetery.
Yeah, she's really expanding her portfolio.
It's actually a famous cemetery for a few reasons. One reason is because it's the final resting place of a lot of famous Italians.
Oh, like who? Any names we can drop?
Well, the cemetery has a Wikipedia page, and that page has a long list of famous Italian people names, but no one I really recognized.
All right, I'll go look later.
Then another major reason it's a famous cemetery is because it's the largest cemetery in Italy. Learning that it's the largest in the country made me realize that I've never thought about it, but cemeteries can be master plan projects, and really it should be designed and thought out.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. It actually is sort of like a mini urban planning project, right? With laying out all the plots and all of that.
It is. There's so many factors to consider. There's the navigation of vehicles, pedestrians, variations of tombstones or mausoleums. Mm. Then there's the landscape and walkways.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell me about it. Our girl Elena, she thought about it. Many of the tombs are inside buildings that have a semicircular shape. Programmatically, she zoned different spaces by religion, which I found really smart because different religions will have different practices, culture, needs.
Oh, yeah, that's smart.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know, maybe because the cemeteries I've been to have always been like grouped by the specific religions, like a Catholic cemetery, and then there's the Jewish cemetery. So it's cool to see one that has like all the religions and then how you design around that.
Mm-hmm. The cemetery also has fields for graves and a crematorium.
Okay, it really does sound like a version of urban planning.
Mm-hmm.
According to Wikipedia, and the page that it has there, it's considered a masterpiece of contemporary cemetery architecture.
Ooh, that's right, it is.
That same year, she had another cemetery project, the French Military Cemetery. The site for this project apparently had a lot of constraints, and even the program was complicated. The Italian government designated a space of land where they wanted to commemorate the French soldiers who died on Italian soil fighting Nazi fascism. The French army included Catholics, Jews, and Muslims, people from Morocco mostly, and also Tunisia and Algeria. So, this time, Elena designed the space for Catholics, Muslims, and Jews to be alongside each other, just like they were as they fought against totalitarian regimes. The cemetery became a symbol of the tolls of war and of unity. If you look at pictures, it's actually very pretty. Elena employed her knowledge of traditional Mediterranean and Italian gardens to assemble the space in a really pleasing way.
Wow, I love how thoughtful and meaningful her designs are, like the way she thought about the different parts of the cemetery.
Agreed. Please tell us that these photos will be in our show notes.
You'll have to go to find out.
I will do that.
What a tease.
In 1950, she designed the Mercato Primavale in Rome. It has been described as a leading example of an open and fluid internal architectural space. It used to house over 50 stalls. Unfortunately, I found an article that, while not dated, it seemed to be from the late 2010s, and it said only 5 tenants remain. One of these tenants is an office named Interazioni Urbane, literally urban interactions. So, Of course, I had to look that up. And what I found had me dreaming of moving to Italy and joining them.
Ooh, do tell.
Okay, so Interazioni Urbane is a nonprofit group of young architects working alongside professionals from different social fields. They focus on creative projects that support communities, especially in disadvantaged urban areas. Their work includes educational and cultural initiatives, raising awareness about human rights, and collaborating internationally on urban recovery and redevelopment. And it's led by ladies. Charette alert.
OMG, I love this.
OMG, this is amazing.
After searching on their website, I'm not sure they're still working at Primavalle, but I love that Primavalle seems to represent everything they are about. Primavalle Market is a piece of history that is in need of revitalization. Right now, it's the host of a few urban interventions and urban artists, so it's totally worth a visit if you're in the area and are looking for an arc venture.
Mm. Putting it on my list.
Mm-hmm.
So, here my research got a little conflicting. One source stated that Elena retired from working with the government, and another source mentioned that from 1958 to 1964, she was the lead architect for several public housing projects in Puglia, Sicily, Abruzzo, and Sardegna. I don't know. Despite that, all sources agree that she kept her own practice until she was 77 years old.
Wow, she kept going and going.
Well, she had multiple jobs, so it's understandable that the dates got mixed up.
I guess. Throughout her career, she designed more than 40 buildings and won about a dozen contests.
Rock star.
During her lifetime, she was a publicly well-known architect in Italy, which is not something many women of that time could say. But she really put her name out there by participating in competitions and national expositions.
That's so great that she was recognized in Italy for her work and that she was able to keep her name in the mix through competitions. Sounds like she was strategic with that.
I love this.
There's a lot of really good research out there on Elena and her projects. Check out our show notes for the tip of the iceberg. She could have easily been a two-parter episode, but I really wanted to talk about three ladies this season. So I'm going to end it here. She died in Rome in 1983. She was 83 years old.
Wow. Thank you for sharing her story. She had such an interesting career and worked on so many project types. I will never think of a cemetery the same way. And I love that she was dedicated not only to architecture, but to working in government to help better her country through public projects, even in such a tumultuous time as World War II.
Agreed. What an incredible story.
Yeah, and I feel she must have been very brave, too.
Mm-hmm.
I know.
All right. Now we have reached the second part of our episode, the caryatid. A caryatid is a stone carving of a woman used as a column or a pillar to support the structure of a Greek or Greek-style building. In each episode, we choose a caryatid, a woman who is working today, furthering the profession through their work, and who ties into the historical woman of our episode. Drumroll, please. Elisa Maceratini.
Yeah,
Elisa.
Yeah.
Elisa Maceratini is the president and co-founder of Interazioni Urbane, which we mentioned earlier. As a refresher, it's an Italian NGO made up of architects, facilitators, and social innovators who develop processes of integration, social inclusion, and sustainable development through participatory planning, community engagement, and innovative design in cities and areas in need of renewal.
I mean, how could she not be the caryatid? As soon as you mentioned Interazioni Urbane was led by women, I was wondering. My eyes were big.
No. I thought it was going to be the whole group, honestly. I thought that's what our caryatid was going to be. But I'm glad that we get to highlight their leader. Brava.
Well, the group alongside Elisa are the caryatid. You're right, Jessica. Elisa is an architect and urban planner. She has a PhD in urban renewal, specialized in slum upgrading, urban and regional planning, and participatory design from the University of Sapienza, Rome. That was the name of her degree. I didn't choose it.
Okay.
Slum upgrading. I don't think I heard that term before.
No.
And so many specializations. So cool.
Yeah. It sounds like degrees on degrees on degrees a little bit.
Yeah.
This lady is so impressive. She has worked in around 20 countries across Africa, Asia, Europe, and Latin America as an international consultant for various agencies and governments. And it's amazing.
Yeah, what a globetrotter.
She's well known for coordinating projects, workshops, and seminars focused on innovative sustainable methods and tools for urban participatory planning. And in 2015, Sergio Mattarella, then president of Italy, presented her with an award from the Italian government for the commitment demonstrated in the social and professional sectors of the Italian female society.
Wow, that's so cool.
Brava. Bravissima.
Before we say goodbye, we want to say thank you to CMYK for the music, John W., our technical advisor, and most of all, thank you for listening.
Remember to check out our show notes for links to all of our resources on this episode, as well as pictures of projects we've talked about.
We hope you enjoyed learning about today's lady and Caryatid along with our banter, and that you are inspired to find out more about them and other amazing professional ladies.
Please let us know what you thought of our episode. If you've enjoyed it, please help us spread the word. Tell your friends, colleagues, sisters, and brothers, and tell them to give us 5 stars on iTunes and Spotify, and write us a review. This will all help us reach a wider audience and for more people to learn about these amazing ladies with us.
Your support means everything to us. If you've enjoyed our content and want other ways to help us with our mission, you can support us by visiting our website for merchandise.
If you don't need any more swag, but you'd still like to consider supporting the research we're doing, you can donate to us on our website, shebuildspodcast.com/donate. Or you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/shebuildspodcast. You can also find links to all of these items on our website.
She Builds Podcast is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. Gable Media is curated thought leadership for an audience dedicated to building a better world. Listen and subscribe to all the shows at GableMedia.com. That's GableMedia.com.
We're excited to hear from you and for you to come back and keep learning about bosses with us. You can email us your thoughts at shebuildspodcast@gmail.com, leave a comment on our website at shebuildspodcast.com, or follow us on Instagram and Facebook at shebuildspodcast and on X at shebuildspod. Until then, see ya.
Bye.
Bye.
In the city that is in need of
revitalization.
Thank you.
Words are hard.